G'day folks, welcome to the summer series of Big on ABC Radio. I'm Quentin Kenahan and I've been presenting a show called Big, where the smallest man on radio, that's me, talks to some of the biggest stars from TV, print, film and sport. This week we feature my chat with Aussie TV legend Ray Martin. Ray has been on our TV for decades and he's someone I consider a close friend, and who also wrote the foreword to my book, Not All Superheroes Wear Capes. It's the summer series of Big on ABC Radio, and this is Ray Martin. Ray, how are you, buddy?
I'm good, mate. Thanks very much. I thought you'd ever ask.
Well, you know, I had to go for the right time, the right setting, and I wanted you in studio. And well, here you are.
I am indeed. Here I am, naked. Like you.
No, I don't think you are yet. You've still got that snazzy scarf on.
Yep.
We can't have you naked yet. But we are going to strip you emotionally naked because whenever I talk to people about you, they have certain questions that they always want to know.
Mm-hmm.
And some are a little more personal than others. But I'm going to jump right in there and come in with the most personal question that everyone asks me.
Why am I not surprised?
And that is the hair real?
You promised you wouldn't talk about the weave.
I'm sorry, but
you promised you wouldn't talk about the weave. There it is. No, it's you've just got to get good hair from India these days, and
right.
I'm finding it hard. So
really?
The wig's changing colour. Yeah,
it is. Well, so that's not an answer. So I'm just going to move on from them.
We used to have hairdressers come in at midday, and they'd after the show they'd ask questions. And they'd say, "Can I just ask if your hair's real?" I'd say, "Well, you better feel it," and they'd sort of feel it and pull it back and realised it wasn't stuck on. So I guess it is real. You'd never know.
There you go. Now, Ray, you've had one of the most illustrious careers in television that I can, I guess, fathom. You know, I'd put you up there with Walter Cronkite, Dan Rather. Bert Newton, you're up there in sort of radio echelon, godlike status, but I know you as a good bloke, as a humanitarian and things like that. And people always ask me, who do you think, and I know your obvious answer will be Fred Hollows, but who besides Fred has been your most memorable guest?
Oh, Don Bradman. Even probably in front of Fred, Sir Donald Bradman. I got the first and sort of last interview with him, and I'm a cricket tragic, and I thought I'd died and gone to heaven when I got to talk to Donald Bradman here in Adelaide.
Yeah.
That was absolutely fantastic. I spent several days with him, and that was fantastic. But I've done some stuff in recent times with Sir David Attenborough. I've got all these knights of the realm, Sir Donald, Sir David. But I've done stuff with David Attenborough, and again, he is in my top shelf, along with Fred Hollows and Don Bradman, all three remarkable blokes.
Well, I actually was with you
the
night in Adelaide that you brought Don, Sir David Attenborough to Adelaide, and I met him. And I have to admit, I got a little bit starstruck and a bit gaga over David Attenborough, because he really is like royalty.
He is. And it says something if you were starstruck, because you've met a lot of these stars in your networking. But no, he is an amazing fellow. He's 90 now and going on about 60. And he's not just a scientist and knowledgeable, but he's a curious, wonderfully generous man. And as he was with you that night, I mean, he really was asking you questions about you rather than about him, wasn't he?
Yeah.
No, he's a fantastic fellow and deserves all the accolades that he gets.
You've talked for a long time about politicians needing to be tough and take the tough decisions. Is that what you meant?
Yes. I mean, one of the problems about climate change from a political point of view is that if you're going to take steps to do something about it, it's going to cost you money. And you as a politician, you're going to have to say to the people who vote for you, look, I'm going to spend some of the taxes I take out of your pocket, not on other things that you might wish, but on this supremely important property. But the difficulty is that you won't see the improvement for another 10 years after I've out of power. Now, that is a very tough thing to say, and a tough decision I have to make. And it's up to the electorate, chaps like you and me in any democratic society, to say to politicians, look, we demand that you have a policy on this because I'm worried about my grandchildren, about the future. And unless we take steps now that may be expensive, the cost of those steps will be as nothing now compared with what it's going to cost then in 20 or 30 years' time.
But should we do it if the Chinese aren't doing it, the Indians aren't doing it?
It's not a question of yes, we do it and it's okay, or no, they don't, it's not okay. This is a gradual process in which everybody can contribute.
And so now so you're semi-retired, and I say semi-retired.
I'm not retired at all, not even semi.
No,
you can't retire if you're doing things you love. David Attenborough says that the secret is you don't do anything you don't like. You don't do anything you like. You only do things you love. And I love this. I love telling stories and love doing television and writing. So that's good. I'm not retired.
And so you're a free agent now.
Absolutely.
You can go to any network you want.
Yep. And I do.
Sort of what gets you up in the mornings? Like what drives Ray Martin?
Oh, everything. I love life. I'm the most curious person after David Attenborough. I like travelling, which is around the corner or across the world. And I wouldn't be dead for quids. So it's why would you not get up? It's a fantastic world out there. I can't believe people still pay me to do these things, you know, like talk to you. Not that I'm being paid for this, of course.
And you have a passion also for photography.
Yep. And I've got my camera here.
You've brought out, is it two photography books now?
No, just one. I'd love to have
just
two.
Just one.
Yeah. Can your publishers please make a second book for me?
Well, I actually was talking to the managing director of Hachette last night, and she said, well, you know, if Ray ever wants to do a book, well, just give her a call.
Thanks, you've become my agent now. The check's in the mail to you.
Well, there you go. I'll charge 15% of that.
Okay, 15% of nothing.
There you go. But you've taken photos all over the world. Like, when did that become a hobby for you, and when did that become a passion?
Obsession now.
Yeah.
More than a passion. It was always a hobby when I first started out as a journalist about 50 years ago now. But I used to get cameramen and producers saying, put the camera down, because I was there to report rather than take photographs. And I felt a bit guilty and a bit shy. I'm no longer shy about that. I bring the camera out now and I say to Sir David Attenborough, or say to the Prime Minister, I take photographs, can I take some photos? And they always say yes, of course. So I'm sorry that I didn't ask all those presidents and all those prime ministers and all those superstars that I've spoken to over the years if I could take their photo, because I'm sure they would have said yes.
And you have met a lot of world leaders.
Yep.
In this time that we're in with, you know, we've got Trump and Hillary, and we've got Turnbull and Shorten, and the world is so volatile at the moment. What do you think as a journalist on the outside looking in needs to happen for change?
Oh, wow. Big question. I think 24-hour news has really changed the rules of politics. We tend to see all the weaknesses of our politicians rather than the strengths, and that's a pity. I think Malcolm Turnbull and Bill Shorten are both extremely capable and competent men. I think they both could be good prime ministers. It's very hard to break loose of the 24-hour news cycle. Every time they pick their nose, someone's got it on camera, and that never was the way in the old days of politics. They can't afford to make mistakes. If they stumble, it's always on camera. And that's a bad thing, because people see these, you know, human beings that are politicians. And we probably need our leaders to be more than simply just like the rest of us. But what should happen? I just think that we should back off a bit and, you know, start being interested in a few other things apart from what happens in Canberra, because I don't think that's the most important thing in our lives.
And how do you think the shape of journalism has changed? Because it's become a lot more magazine-focused. You know, there'll be more articles about a Kardashian than there will be about, you know, a bombing in Syria or an environmental tragedy. What do you think? What does that say about our society?
It shows that we move fast. We don't have time to linger much. But it also shows that now this choice gives us some responsibility. But if you want to know what's going on in Syria, if you want to know what's going on around the world, then you can find it online, you can read it from magazines or newspapers, you can go on radio and hear it. It's up to you as a human being, or as someone in society to inform yourself. The information's there. You don't have to take the crap information. You don't have to just get one view. There's enough views out there on social media and otherwise, certainly online, for you to be informed, better informed than when I was a kid. And so I think people can do it, but it's now up to people not to simply lay back and expect it to come to them. They've got to go and look for it, and they can be highly informed. There are books and programs, etc., that can tell you the answers if you bother looking.
Okay, I'm going to put something to you. You get people like Bill O'Reilly,
yep,
who are pro-Republican. They're pro-gun. They're pro-nuclear weapons. And you've got the Fox News company that don't mind putting their agenda forward. And then you've got moderates like who are comedians like Stephen Colbert, Jon Stewart. Do you think that journalism should be biased, or do you think that it should go back to how it used to be, where journalists simply spoke the news?
Yeah,
instead of giving the opinion.
Mate, it's always been biased. I mean, newspapers, that's part of individuals owning newspapers. They present, whether it's Rupert Murdoch, whether it's 100 other media moguls from around the world, they use the newspapers to put forward their views. And that's what they've done from the days of Hearst and done from the days of Charles Dickens. So we should live with that. That's why we need the ABC. That's why we need SBS. That's why we need independent news services to tell us a balance. Despite the attack the ABC gets, it is a very balanced news service, and I think we need those. But similarly, as I said earlier, if you listen to some right-wing shock jock on radio, that doesn't mean that you subscribe to what he or she says. You can listen to that and decide you don't agree and go and read something else. So I think it is back. It's easy to blame someone else for this right-wing fuselage, if you like, of opinions. Well, get off your bum and go and have a look yourself. Go and look at some other opinions and check out whether, in fact, the nonsense about gun laws and the nonsense about nuclear weapons and so on, see whether it's fair dinkum, see whether it's true, see whether you agree or disagree. But it's up to you rather than, as an active citizen to go and do it. Don't expect someone else to feed it to you.
Now, mate, I want to change tacks here and talk about something that's very near and dear to your heart, and that's the Fred Hollows Foundation.
Yep.
You've been doing a lot of work recently to raise money for the Fred Hollows Foundation, and a lot of it is based on the fact that you want to give sight to people in third world countries, to people in regional Australia. How's that all going? Tell us where we're up to at the moment.
It's an amazing story. As I said, Fred Hollows is probably the most remarkable bloke I've ever met, given the range of his passions, and given the fact that he had this dream of ending cataract blindness. And cataract blindness is the main cause of blindness in the world, in the third world. And there are about 40 million people who are blind because of cataracts. In Australia, it takes 10 minutes to have your cataract done. It may take you 2 months to wait in hospital, but finally it's an easy operation and it's reachable for most Australians. If you live in the third world, you don't have $20. You can't afford to do it, and so someone has to help you out. And that's what the Hollows, he had this dream of ending it. There are probably 8 million people, maybe more, who can now see, who were blind when Fred started this. Now, that's the power of one. That's an incredible impact that one man's had,
yeah,
through the Hollows Foundation, the Fred Hollows Foundation. We'll reach that stage, which was a cockeyed dream of ending cataract blindness. Now, you have your own disability. You know how hard it is to get around in your condition, but imagine what it's like if you're blind. And you're blind unnecessarily,
yeah.
And you can actually have it fixed. And I've seen, some of the acolytes, some of those who Fred's taught, who can fix. If you're blind in two eyes, cataracts, they can do that in 20 minutes, 15 to 20 minutes, they can fix both those. You can see again. It's about as quick as shearing a sheep. Now, that's the sort of thing that we shouldn't have. The same as blindness in Aboriginal Australia. We've got trachoma. We shouldn't have it. It's just a hygiene problem that we should be able to fix. And that's what Fred had decided in his sort of cantankerous way, that he was mad as hell and wasn't going to take it anymore, much as what you've done with disability and other things you've campaigned for. So these are fixable if we, again, get off our backsides and do something.
Fred's dying after one hell of a fight against cancer. He doesn't deserve an obituary. I think a celebration is more the go.
Test you for glasses. Let's see if we might make you see a bit better, eh?
I believe the basic attribute of mankind is to look after each other. And that's what makes humans look after other humans. when they're in need to a much greater extent than animals can or will ever do.
Now, even though we're with the ABC, I'm going to allow you to have a free plug. Where can people get information about the Fred Hollows Foundation and donate to the Fred Hollows Foundation?
Well, just go online. Just go online to the Fred Hollows Foundation. It is literally $25 can give restore someone's sight. I mean, that sounds like a slogan. It's not. It's fair income that $25 is all it takes to give a blind person their sight again. Now, there aren't many things you can do for $25 these days. Maybe get, you know, five cups of coffee. You probably spend that much a week on coffee. Well, that will actually give someone sight. And you start to give someone, especially, you know, you give people sight of the third world, it means there's probably a young girl who's been the caretaker who can now go out and go to school or can get a life instead of looking after grandma or looking after mum. So you're not helping one person, you're helping a number of people. And it's as easy as that. It really is just a bit of money.
Now, mate, you and I have a shared obsession, and that is with our four-legged friends.
Yep.
I have my dog Patchy, and you have sort of semi-adopted your daughter's dog.
Ched. Yeah.
Tell us about Ched.
Ched's a border collie. He is the George Clooney of dogs.
Really?
If I was younger, mate, he's a chick magnet. There's no woman can actually walk past Ched without wanting to touch him. So if I was younger, it would be a great entree to to the female sex. But as a result, I just walk him around these days and people admire him. But he's also, I mean, you know it with Patch, that it's very hard if you wake up and you're feeling a bit shitty on the wrong side of the bed. Yeah, Patch will change your demeanour, change your attitude straight away, as Jed does for me. It's very hard to walk a dog or be around a dog and not be happy. They're the most amazing animals, and they make you feel good. And, they're, you know, as Patch is for you, they're great comforts, aren't they? And they're great, almost a security blanket. They when the rest of the world hates you, the dog loves you.
That's very true. Now, mate, what's next for Ray Martin?
Oh, just much the same, mate. I want to keep doing television. I want to keep writing some books. I've got to try and finish this book on Fred Hollows that I've been writing over for the last couple of years. And lots of photos. I'm obsessive. If I don't take photos these days, I'll go and take photos of the flowers or the garden outside just to, you know, because I have this withdrawal problem. But but I just want to keep doing what I'm doing, much as you've said in your book. I mean, it's there's a big world out there, and you can't. The last thing you'd hate to do, you or I would hate to do, is be locked behind four walls, as you said in the book. And so we got to make sure we get up and get out there and keep meeting it head on, as you've done all your 41 years.
Yeah, mate, we have. I mean, it's so great. We have so many shared obsessions. It's great. our beloved Rabbitohs this year.
Yeah.
How do you think they've gone this year?
No, they've gone ordinary. Despite Russell's best intentions, Russell Crowe, who owns the Rabbitohs, if anyone owns them, we all own them, I suppose. No, they haven't done very well, but that's all right. I mean, we're match fit when it comes to losing at South Sydney. We've won more premierships than any team in football, any kind of football, including the British kind, soccer. But we've also lost a lot, so we know how to lose. And for the moment, we're losing, but that's all right. We'll come back. Yeah, I mean, no wonder they're your team. I mean, given your own lifestyle, you're the bloke who's been knocked over 1,000 times and got up 1,000 times.
Yeah, you're very good at turning it back to me. I know that you're very, very good, but we're not doing that today. We're turning it back to you.
Okay, fine.
What do you think it's going to take for the team to get up?
Oh, they've probably got to have heart. They've actually got to want to win, and whether it's Aussie rules or cricket, you've actually got to go out there and refuse to be beaten. I don't think they don't look like they've wanted to win this year. The last couple of games they've won, and they look serious again, and probably Russell Crowe's got up them for the rent. But we know it's about coaches, playing for your coaches. We know it's about playing for your mates, and that's what they haven't been
doing
enough.
Shouldn't it be about playing for your community?
Yeah, for your fans, probably.
Yeah,
probably. There's 40,000 Aussie, 40,000 fans like you and I who support the Rabbitohs. Yes, it should be, and they're paid a lot of money, but you've got to remind them that they've got to, pull their finger out.
Right. Now, I want to throw some names at you.
Yeah.
And tell me what they were like to interview. Tom Cruise.
Terrific, terrific talent. I think I got his trust over the years enough, so he was happy to talk about anything, even his religion. And I think he's a good bloke, highly professional actor. And when you talk to him on camera, he is up for it. He knows he's got to give answers. He knows he's got to perform, and then he leaves and goes back to work.
Bob Hawke.
Probably the most vain person I ever interviewed. Also one of the most talented.
And not me, not me.
Oh, well, you're with him. I put you with him.
Yeah.
In terms of vanity. But no, he's incredibly capable. But, you know, was so concerned about the way he looked and the way his hair was and et cetera. And he was one of those we had to actually turn off the television when we used to interview him on midday and a current affair because he'd look at himself all the time rather than look at me. And but he does that. But you know, having said that, he's probably one of the best prime ministers we've had.
One of the most touching interviews I've ever seen, and one of the most thought-provoking interviews I've ever seen was the last interview you did with Robin Williams.
Yeah.
That was a very tough interview because he'd just come out of rehabilitation for the second time or third time. But you two still managed to have each other in stitches for the whole interview. Now, that to me was not an interview. That's an experience.
Yep.
What was that like?
It was fabulous. Experience is a really good word. I was in stitches. I'm not sure he was. He did tend to laugh at his own jokes because they're very funny. But it's like interviewing Dame Edna or like interviewing. Who else? There was someone else that I, you know, Paul Hogan to a degree, but Dame Edna certainly, where you don't, with Robin Williams and Dame Edna, you don't quite know when they're finished because they just have this stream of comedy consciousness. And so they keep going, you don't want to step on their next joke. And yet you, someone like Dame Edna says, next question. And she sort of tries to deliberately embarrass you. Whereas Robin Williams didn't. Robin Williams is simply the funniest person I've ever met. And it's very hard. I mean, Billy Birmingham, the 12th man,
yeah.
I interviewed recently for something, and he's much the same. I was thinking of that he's one of those where it's very hard to ask questions when you're laughing, and you laugh at people like Robin Williams or Billy Birmingham or Dame Edna, and so that makes it tough, but also exhilarating that there's such great performers. Robin Williams knew exactly how long a short story should go. Robin Williams knew sight gags; he could fall over and make you laugh, as well as say things that made you laugh. So that's genius. I mean, people who can do that are genius level.
I read somewhere that you got to stop being a man child. You got to stop doing these man child type movies. I hope you're not going to grow up.
Oh, I think I'm 44.
But do you fear growing up, Robin?
No. I mean, I've got... The wonderful thing is when you have children, you get a second chance because you can time travel with them. I mean, when I play with Cody, who's 4, I get to be like 4, and then he'll go, I need quiet time now.
But do they think you're funny? Do they think you're funny or they think you're a bit mad?
They enjoy some of my work. It's great when Cody will go, some of your films lack depth. I think they think that sometimes Cody will actually brag to people. We'll be walking down, he'll laugh and he'll turn to somebody in the street going, my dad's hilarious. And I'm going to go, I know, get away. And that's my wife. But you know. But I think, sometimes they think I'm funny, sometimes some of the best times are just the times when you can be with them. Like when you read a story to them. That's the same way when someone asks today, why you do, what makes you do a script? It's like, if you are reading a script like a child listens to a story and you find yourself drawn into it, it'll usually work. I mean, it'll be, or at least be interesting in that way.
Now, when you read the stories, do you do voices?
Yes, I do. Sometimes, and sometimes they don't want voices.
Yeah.
Sometimes I make up characters. I've done these books for children, these like Pecos Bill and Fool in the Flying Ship. Oh, someone behind you? So he goes, shh, that's time. But I do voices for them, and sometimes they just like it very straight. It's almost like an acting exercise where they just want you to read the story and they want to just imagine it themselves, and that's what's wonderful.
Now, I haven't done a reset here, as my producer would say to me, but ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Big on ABC Local Radio. My guest is Ray Martin. Ray, it is that time again on our show where we do the five things, and the five things is where I get our guest to take the elevator back down,
yep,
in hope of inspiring others, and we ask for five inspirational things, and I'm going to ask you five questions in the hope that you can inspire others. So, Ray, what does it take, number one, to make a good journalist?
Curiosity, homework, and I think probably, you know, the ability to tell stories.
Excellent. Number two, what is the best way to get into the game of journalism that you think? Wow. Is it through cadetship these days, or is it through university, or is it just a dog-eared determination?
A bit of both, bit of all three. When I started, you didn't have to have any of those. Maybe determination. Now you must have a degree. To do anything professionally, you've got to have a degree of some kind these days, unless you it used to be the mail boy in the ABC days when I first started, or mail girl, would get into broadcasting that way. It's not so easy these days. I think you've got to be, you can do it, even though it's probably in university, it's a journalism degree is almost a higher mark than medicine, which is ridiculous because dopes like me can do it.
Yep.
So it's you shouldn't have to be bright, but I'm afraid you do. But the other thing is you've got to be determined. If you want to do it, like everything in life, if you want to do it, you can do it. It's not going to be easy as it was when I started. But if you want to do it, you can do it. If you want to be a brain surgeon within reason, as long as you've got some brains, you can do it. And I guess that's the thing about life. If you find you can't be a brain surgeon, then take your next choice. And journalism's like that. I mean, if you want to be a journalist, don't tell me how hard it is. Just go and do it.
What are the biggest no-nos for journalism? Number three, what are the biggest no-nos?
I guess if you're starting out young, if you're going to bucket somebody or really tap a bucket on somebody, then make sure you got your facts right. Because if you're young, you're going to meet that same person somewhere down the track, either in business or in government or in sport, sometime later. So if you're going to be critical of someone, you better make sure you're right. Don't take the cheap way. Don't take the easy way. You know, do the homework. And if you can back up, and you know, so often my line was really, I don't care whether you like the story, but was it fair? Was it fair? If it was fair, then you know what you think would be good if you liked it, if you liked this story. But at the end of the day, was it fair? If it was fair, that's all right. That's what it's about.
Number four. Let me think of number four. Number four. What do you think is the best way to be a good humanitarian?
I guess just listen and put yourself in their shoes. Imagine what you'd be like to be a blackfur in Australia. Imagine what it'd be like to be Quentin Kenahan. Imagine what it'd be like to be someone who's battling the odds. If you can imagine, you walk in their shoes for half a minute, you've got no choice. You've got to actually help.
And number five, what makes a good photo?
Oh, wow. What makes a good photo? Probably, you know, anyone could take photographs as they do on iPhones. You've got to have an eye to take a great photograph. The difference between good and great is an eye. If you don't have an eye for it, occasionally it's luck if you're there when something happens, but you've got to see something. You've got to make sure that you get inside a person's head. If you're doing a portrait, you've got to make sure that you actually see a landscape from a different way from what everybody sees. You can't just be Ken Duncan, who's the great Australian photographer and who's a friend of mine and my mentor. He says, for example, if you go bush and you want to photograph outside, stop, put the camera down and shake hands with the country. So, you know, for a moment, look around what you're going to photograph. Don't just go and snap it. Just look around and think, how do I do this differently? How do I do this better than someone else does? And then cross your fingers and hope you do.
Have we done five? I think we've done five.
We've done 15.
Mate, give me your top three wish list of interviews.
Wish interviews? The Queen? I'd love to interview the Queen. I want to know what's in her handbag.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's nothing apart from wrapped up paper in the handbag. The Queen, if she was free to speak, I mean, she's been around for so long now at the centre of so many decisions, not just in Britain but around the world. So she'd be great. The Pope always, especially this Pope, he has again been a man of influence and a man with a deep insight into things. I think he'd be, if they're prepared to talk honestly about homosexuals and about female priests and all those sorts of things that popes don't normally talk about, gay marriage, the Pope would be great. The third one would be, I guess, any time is the President of the United States. It's just a powerful job. I'm not sure I care about talking to Donald Trump, but he's not going to be president, so that's I'll be able to give him a miss. But I think people of power are always interesting because, as John Howard said at one stage, they also tend to be complex. And complex people are great to talk to because, you know, they can come out of left or right field when you don't expect it, as you do.
Ray Martin, what a nice guy. This is the summer series of Big on ABC Radio. And tomorrow I'll feature my chat with Australian comedian, writer, performer and could have been politician Tim Ferguson. See you then.